You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, we're so immature. Welcome to the program. Hour two on this Wednesday. Dan and the Danettes. Dan Patrick Show. Had a lot of fun first hour. Man, this is why we do the show. There are just moments where you get a chance to have fun. And look, the topics have been pretty serious here the last couple of months, but there are times when you just start to giggle. You just want to laugh for a little bit. By the way, happy Dak Prescott Day. It's finally here. Cowboys' last chance to sign their star quarterback after today. He plays the season on a franchise tag and will somehow have to get by on $31.4 million, unless they can reach a last-minute long-term deal. And even with all these huge stories going on, the Dak saga has been front and center all offseason. How big is this story? What compares to Dak Prescott and his contract? You know, Tom Brady was a big deal. Dak Prescott's been going on for how many months now? 8 months? They haven't spoken since March, and here we are. Dak Prescott, the Cowboys, the most nationally oriented team in all of pro sports. I mean, you might get an argument with the Yankee fans, but Dallas is right there, and Dak's role in this is a little more confusing. We know he's a good quarterback. Is he a $40 million a year quarterback? You got to get deeper into the playoffs to validate that number, I think. You got to win your division. That would help too. But Prescott's going to be interesting this season, going into this season, coming off a very good season last year. But why? Here's something that, you know, people always bring this up to me. You say he's a good quarterback. He threw for 5,000 yards last year. I go, okay. The top five quarterbacks in passing yards in 2019 didn't make the playoffs, folks. Overrated stats. Jameis Winston, Dak Prescott, Jared Goff, Phillip Rivers, and Matt Ryan. Those are your big yardage guys. All right? Now, he's going to earn himself a lot of money one way or another. And he bet on himself, which I think is great. And I would do the same thing. Bet on yourself. Dallas is being responsible, it feels like, with their money. Like, it's weird how they spend. We're going to give Zeke Elliott this money. We're going to give Amari Cooper this money. Dak Prescott? We're not going to give him that money. But this is just another layer of drama on the NFL's most popular soap opera, and that is your Dallas Cowboys. But it looks like he'll do a one-year deal, and I certainly understand it, but I just don't know if Dallas is all in on him. Now, people came back yesterday when I said that, and they said, well, they're offering him a five-year deal. I think they are trying to get a team-friendly five-year deal. And Dak wants to be back in the marketplace before he's 30, and that's why he wants a four-year deal. His quarterback rating is really high. His passer rating is the third highest by any quarterback in his first four seasons in the league, in history. Kurt Warner, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Tony Romo, Dan Marino. That's the list. But you don't have Super Bowl appearances there. Russ, you do. Kurt, you do. Dan Marino went to a Super Bowl. Tony Romo is the guy he replaced. So stats can be tricky. I want to know, like, when Dallas was good, Dak was good. Or when Dak was good, Dallas was good. And when Dak was bad, Dallas was bad. You can't have that inconsistency at that position. No matter what you're paying that quarterback. And he was horrible in their bad games, but he was great in those games that they won. You can't have that fluctuation. And you have that with Dak Prescott. But it looks like he's going to do a one-year deal, then an unrestricted free agent. But it, you know, Kirk Cousins actually gave him some advice. Did you guys know this? That during the season, last season, Kirk Cousins went up to Dak Prescott and he said, my message to Dak when I saw him mid-season last year was, hey, whatever happens, don't be afraid of the tag. Cousins told ESPN this story back in May. All right. And Kirk D. Cousins certainly benefited, did well with the tag, but didn't sign a long-term deal with the team that was tagging him. Neither Drew Brees, who was tagged by the Chargers in 2005, or Kirk Cousins, tagged by Washington in 16 and 17, wound up signing multi-year contracts with those teams that drafted them, both eventually moving elsewhere. We're going to talk to Jane Slater, who does a great job for the NFL Network covering the Cowboys. Could you see a scenario where Dak Prescott moves on from the Cowboys after 1 year? Yeah, Paul.
That was my question. You're not going to get an answer to it. Does Dak Prescott want to be a Cowboy? He's going to get paid either way. But if he accepts the franchise, he gets that big money this year, next year. Eventually, he'll be a free agent. And the one thing you'll never find out the answer to is maybe he and his agent don't want to play for that franchise long term. And that's why they're saying no to these things. Which, again, you would never know.
But this is a great time to be the Cowboys starting quarterback because you do have everything in place, or at least most of the pieces in place, to be a formidable team. You have a new coach in there who has been a quarterback whisperer, and maybe that helps him because I can't put all of this on Jason Garrett. I got to put some of this on leadership there, the quarterback. Defense has some names, but as I've pointed out many times, they're names because they play for the Dallas Cowboys. And if I'm Dak Prescott, I want to stay as the Dallas Cowboy quarterback. There is no other position in football like the Dallas Cowboy quarterback. And the amount of money that he was making off the field in endorsements, supplement that with whatever you're going to make from the Dallas Cowboys, and you get to stay in that uniform, in that stadium, with that talent around you for the next couple of years. And I was told from the beginning they were not budging off wanting a four-year deal. And you know what? They haven't budged off a four-year deal. Cowboys don't want to budge off the five-year deal. Got a stalemate here. This program brought to you by Callaway. Callaway's Chrome Soft is the most advanced tour ball ever. Every aspect of the new Chrome Soft has been re-engineered to deliver their fastest, highest quality, most consistent tour ball ever. Get your new Chrome Soft or Chrome Soft X golf balls today. CallawayGolf.com. What is the poll question, McLovin?
Well, we started with, who would you rather sign to a five-year deal? Nick Bosa or Dak Prescott? Mm-hmm. See if anyone steals that. 78% went Nick Bosa. A lot of people yelled at me on Twitter that it should have been Aaron Donald, but I don't know if that's fair. Of course you'd go Aaron Donald, right?
Aaron Donald over Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
How old is Aaron Donald? Is he 26, 27?
He's 29. That's why you don't go Aaron Donald.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's why we didn't put him in there, because of his age. I would take Dak Prescott over Aaron Donald. If I'm paying for the next 5 years, then I would take Dak Prescott. Yeah, McLovin.
Other people ask, do you have the wrong Bosa? Who's better, Joey or Nick? Was a big side debate in my Twitter feed. Because Joey's apparently very, very good, too.
No, he is very, very good. No, he's not apparently.
Yeah.
He is very, very good. He's had two Pro Bowls in four seasons. That sound right? For Joey? I think Nick is, he might look like the chosen one here between the two.
Are there any more? Any other Bosas on the way?
Well, Chase Young is also a Ohio State. He's like the next Bosa, everyone says. I know he's not related.
How
honestly.
Is it that Ohio State, yeah. Like you have those two guys on opposite ends. I got Bosa and Chase Young. How did anybody move the ball at all? Complete a pass?
I think people put up big
actually,
numbers.
Most of them didn't. What?
I think like because Ohio State scored so much, like they kind of laid off. Remember, and they're known for their offense under Urban Meyer, not their defense.
Well, I went to the Michigan game, and they didn't seem to put up a lot of points that day.
Oh, did they shut them down that?
Yeah, that was one of those that I actually felt sorry for Michigan in that game in Columbus. And that's never happened before where I feel sorry for Michigan. But that day I did. It's like, okay, it's enough. Like it got to the early third quarter and I go, oh, man, this is going to be, they're going to put up a 60 bagel on them. Yes, McClellan.
Are you excited for Ohio State, Michigan on Memorial Day next year?
Is that when it's going to be?
I don't. Does that seem, I know this, we haven't talked about it, but the spring college football just seems so weird.
If it happens, great. I'll welcome it. You know what's going to be happening in a week to two? In 2 weeks, we're going to be inundated with so much sports. And usually at the end of July, it's, you know, kind of quiet. Full baseball slate, and that's usually not a good thing. And maybe you get summer league basketball. Maybe a little soccer. Golf. Now, in the next week to 2 weeks, a plethora of games in a variety of sports, if all goes as scripted. Yes, Todd?
What could emotionally be worse for sports fans? Having a few more months of nothingness, pretty much, or it comes back briefly as a little tease and then they end up pulling the plug on it?
Ooh. I think I would rather have them come back and then they pull the plug. Like, I just need a little bit. And if it's sustainable, great. I don't need fans. I don't need if they're able to play. That I'm fine with that. I don't want to get greedy. But if you're saying they go 2 weeks and then they have to shut it down, at this point, I'll take those 2 weeks because we have been parched. But in the next 2 weeks, get ready. We're going to be excited for baseball, late July baseball. Who would have thought? Yeah, McLovin.
Can't wait for NFL training camp B stories to overwhelm all three of those active sports, by the way.
Yes.
If they act.
No, it's true. Once NFL training camp happens.
Is it going to happen the 28th? It seems.
Okay. I don't know if you guys are aware of some of the players have some proposals for the NFL. An opt-out clause for at-risk players to receive their salary, but not bonuses, if they decide to not play. An opt-out clause for players with at-risk families to earn an accrued season and benefits if they decide not to play. An opt-out clause for players who leave the team after reporting. A $250,000 stipend guaranteed to all players if they show up to camp and everything is shut down because of COVID-19 concerns. So the amount rises to $500,000 if the season starts only to be shut down. The NFL's got some work to do. The Players Association and the NFL have some work to do, and they don't have a whole lot of time to do it. Just a side story to keep an eye on here. Bo in Ohio joins us to lead us off this hour. Hi, Bo. What's on your mind?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all doing today?
Great.
Splendid. 5'9 and a COVID 200. Anyway, the point I was wanting to make was about Dak Prescott. Do you think that Jerry's numbers, his years and his offer, has to do with the fact that Jerry probably thinks that you can win a Super Bowl with Dak Prescott, but you can't win a Super Bowl because of Dak Prescott?
I think it's a valid question there, Bo. Thank you. I don't know. To me, Dak Prescott is, he can be a very good quarterback. The problem is that there is there's a separation there between when he's really good and then when he's really bad. And you're not going to win a Super Bowl if you have a quarterback who plays that way. If Dak is able to be, I need him to be better in games that the team is not playing well. Like, he still has to be that consistent position there for them because it's so important. And I don't know if I can say, hey, they lose because of him, or when they lose, he doesn't play well. He has to be able to salvage a couple of games there where the team's not playing well, but somehow he is able to play well. But you can't have 8 wins. Now, if he has 11 or 12, I don't think this is it's a no-brainer if I'm the Cowboys. But you don't have that luxury. You have a bad division. The Giants were mediocre. Redskins weren't any good. And the Eagles were all banged up. And you didn't win the division. He's going to bet on himself again this year. And maybe he puts up 5,000 yards, but 5,000 yards doesn't mean anything to me. If the top 5 quarterbacks in yardage, passing yardage last year, didn't make the playoffs, why are we so excited when we go, he threw for 5,000 yards? So did Jameis Winston. He threw 30 touchdowns. So did Jameis Winston. I need you to win games. That's the most important stat a quarterback has. And there were times when Mahomes, it felt like, was the singular force in winning a game for Kansas City. You see this with Brady with the Patriots, where they didn't have any offensive weapons, or it felt like they were undermanned. They somehow would win a game. And that's the difference. The great quarterbacks find a way to win a game. And Dak Prescott has to do that. But he's still, if you look what's going to happen, $31.4 million if he doesn't get signed to a long-term deal. And then he's an unrestricted free agent in 2021. $69 million over 2 years if he gets tagged again. An unrestricted free agent. $123 million over 3 years. Unrestricted free agent in 2023. So he's got a lot of money guaranteed, and then he'll be a free agent before he turns 30. That's what the Cowboys have to try to beat. Their offer has to be better than that. And I don't know if it's going to be. And I don't know if Jerry cares to have it better. Fourth quarter stats for Dak Prescott. His rating, eighth. His quarterback rating was eighth. Completion percentage tied for 12th. And TD interception ratio, 12th as well. So, not bad. Not bad. But if you're going to pay somebody $40 million a year, I can't have you be not bad. You got to be a sure thing. And maybe, and I'm being accused of not holding other quarterbacks accountable, Jared Goff when he was in the Super Bowl or Kirk Cousins in the playoffs. No, I am. I do hold them accountable. I mean, Goff got paid. I didn't see enough to pay him. And I know that that's the going rate. But that's, I don't understand that logic with the owners. Hey, the going rate, we got to pay him a dollar more than Russell Wilson. Or we got to pay him a dollar more than, you don't have to. Because there are certain quarterbacks who aren't worth that. Jared Goff hasn't proved it. He's shown glimpses. I mean, 2018, they could do no wrong, right? Him and Sean McVay. When's the last time we talked about the Rams? Jared Goff, Sean McVay. The NFL moves so quickly. Forgot all about him. We almost forgot about Carson Wentz. People are ready to move on from Carson Wentz. He's still an elite quarterback. It's just, here we are with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes. Now we're waiting for Trevor Lawrence. Justin Fields. This is how it happens. It's so quick. Yeah, McLovin.
Remember Baker Mayfield? How excited we were about him?
Yeah. Baker Mayfield, Jr. the third.
I think he had the best rookie year ever.
Yeah, he did. Cam's back. It moves quickly here. Yes, McLovin.
So who do you pay then? Like, you've narrowed it down to three quarterbacks who are...
Well, Deshaun Watson I pay, and Russell Wilson I pay, and Aaron Rodgers I pay, Brady I pay. Pay, Ben I pay, Breeze I pay. There's a lot of quarterbacks you pay, but those are guys who have a proven track record. Being able to win, that's the most important part. Ask any of those guys. Drew Breeze has 75,000 passing yards. If I said, I'm going to take away 25,000 yards, you get one more Super Bowl. He'll go, where do I sign up? Brady doesn't care about his stats. Couldn't care less. He threw for 500 yards in the Super Bowl. Ask Matthew Stafford. He's thrown for 4,500 yards and 25 touchdowns every year. He's got nothing to show for it. Yes, McLovin.
Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. Remember his playoff performances? He got paid big time.
In 2019, in games which Dak had a quarterback rating of 90 or more, the Cowboys were 8-2. In games where his rating was under 90, 0-6. We'll check in with Cowboys. The great reporter for the NFL Network, Jane Slater, will join us coming up right after this, and your phone calls as well. This is The Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com, or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Phone calls coming up, 877-3DP-SHOW. Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. You can see her on NFL Network's NFL Now today at 1 Eastern. Her Twitter is at Slater, NFL. Jane joins us now. It's Happy Dak Prescott today, Jane. How are you going to celebrate?
You know, waking up early, because you never know, as the Cowboys typically say, their door is always open for deals. But I can confirm that they have not had any talks or negotiations with Todd France, Dak's agent. So I think we're a little less than 6 hours now till this deadline, 3 p.m. here Central Time. Does look like we're moving towards the franchise tag on this one.
If we looked at the offer with the Cowboys, is this a fair offer? Or is it, you know, how's it viewed league-wise, I guess?
Depends on who you ask, Dan. Now, the Cowboys consider it a fair offer. If you look at the numbers, they're looking at anywhere between, I was told, about $33, $35 million. And then the guarantee is closer to Jared Goff. So it's over $100 million. It's probably right around that $110 million number. And then as for total guarantee, well, I'm told it's the guarantee is about 85 plus. It's a rolling guarantee, something that they do these days. But then it's all guaranteed. So if you look at the money, it's, of course, not bad for a guy who's been paid less than $5 million to play for the Cowboys. He was that fourth round pick. I always remind people, behind Jamil Showers and, of course, Tony Romo when Tony Romo went down. But he feels that he can get the 31.4 this year. Next year, if they franchise tag him again, he gets $37 million. And then, of course, when they're looking at that third year, which is really the sticking point for them, both in this contract and then the contract after a second franchise tag, that's when they're expecting the gambling revenue to go up, the TV contracts to spike, and that's when Dak's agent really wants to cash in for his client.
And I wondered this, and I wanted to ask you the question, can you see maybe a situation where Dak moves on from the Cowboys?
I don't think it's gotten to that point yet, Dan. I mean, I just keep going back to when he was a rookie, the way that he galvanized that locker room. This was Tony Romo's city. This was his team. It was his franchise. Not only when he came back was he not allowed to compete for the job, it practically forced Tony into retirement. Of course, he's seen a lot of success now in the broadcasting booth, which I do have to apologize. I remember saying on your show he was going to struggle in the booth, and he certainly did not, and he got paid handsomely. So, look, we've all got to eat crow when we have a bad take. That was a terrible take by me a couple years ago.
I didn't even remember it, Jane, but thank you for bringing that up.
Look, I like to keep myself honest here, Dan, but Dak has done such a good job both on and off the field. Now, I know people have gotten to Dak and they've tried to encourage him that, look, you take this deal because you don't know what the economy is going to look like. Also, I should bring up, I was talking to a couple of agents because I was polling them. In other words, what would you do? And they're sort of as split as the fan base is on this. But one agent reminded me of Anthony Spencer's deal. He was franchise tagged when he was a young lineman. They thought that he was going to have a lot of success the last year, so they rolled the dice. He didn't play as well, and they didn't have a great year. In fact, the Cowboys weren't going to franchise tag him. They ended up tagging him again. He injured himself in the third game, and then looking back in hindsight, probably wished that he had had the security of a longer-term deal. Dak has just always been a guy that has banked on himself. He's been pretty durable. He's played 64 regular season games. He's gotten them to three playoffs. He's won one. This is a guy that from high school to college to even the league has always bet himself. I always talk about his history, which is interesting. He's always replaced the starter because of injury and never given the job back. And then everyone always asks me, well, is this going to be a distraction? Well, it certainly wasn't a distraction last season. And this is a guy that's played through his mother being sick. He played with Tony Romo breathing over his shoulder and won the job. And the Cowboys didn't look back since. He does an amazing job of compartmentalizing. But what he's doing here is he's banking on himself and trying to get max value.
Is he a great quarterback?
You know, if you ask his teammates, they'll tell you he's a great quarterback. And I think there's a lot of things that come with being a great quarterback. Are you a true leader? Do you galvanize the locker room? And in terms of the intangibles, they brought in John Kitna last year, of course, who's not here this year with the staff. They, of course, brought in a whole new coaching staff that he really hasn't had a chance to familiarize himself with because of COVID and virtual OTAs and the holdout. But I've been told within that building, Mike McCarthy, from what he saw his rookie season, when he came up there and he beat the Packers, which I would argue was one of the one things that was sort of in Jerry's crawl space when he was trying to decide Romo or Dak. It was the way he went up there. He led that team to victory. Mike McCarthy remembers that. He's mentioned that. I've been told that he thinks that he can do great things with Dak Prescott, that this is the guy that you want. And then you look at his gaudy passing numbers last year. I mean, he certainly answered all the critics who said he couldn't throw the ball. He's time and time again, I sort of answered a lot of the questions. It is a little frustrating, I think, probably for him, that this is a team that has famously overpaid players, that has never let a contract like this get down to the wire. You've just got a really shrewd businessman in Todd France negotiating this contract, and you finally have the Cowboys saying, we're going to be smarter about the way that we do these deals, and that's why we're at this impasse. The Cowboys want a five-year deal. He wants a four-year deal. I keep asking the two sides, well, just get the four-year deal done. The argument is they want to tear that deal up in year three and then, like I said, capitalize on that growing cap and the revenue. And the Cowboys feel like they are paying him top of the market money. They front load these contracts. They believe they should get that extra year because they believe that this is a fair offer.
I have more of a problem with Ezekiel Elliott's contract than I do what you're going to pay Dak Prescott. Like I didn't understand when you re-sign a running back. I want you for 4 or 5 years and then I move on. You're all interchangeable, it feels like. Quarterback, it's different.
You know, to your point, Dan, the Cowboys were pretty solid on that, saying that Todd Gurley didn't deserve Todd Gurley money. And this thing got pretty acrimonious. And it was, I didn't go to bed on this one either because I knew someone was going to pick up the phone. In that case, Rocky Arsenault, his agent, picked up the phone. Zeke came back from Cabo. He had what I call FOMO. He wanted to be around his teammates. They were able to get the deal done. But I would also argue that because of Todd Gurley's contract and Ezekiel's contract, you got to think the next running back may not get top of the market value because you haven't seen a sort of production. And it goes back to all the analysts who are saying, you know, look, the running back doesn't deserve some of that money. Well, Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott's contract certainly didn't do the next running back any favors.
She's Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. She didn't think Tony Romo would be any good joining us here on the Dan Patrick Show. You know, I was with you, though. I didn't, because I'd never heard Tony be effusive and really, you know, dramatic and opinionated. And he's different. And I had somebody who said, man, he killed his rehearsal. Killed it. And I went, wow, okay. What was it about Romo that you were cautious about him being an analyst?
I think it's tricky, I think, in this business to analyze your peers. And so I thought that that was something that Romo was going to struggle with. But I also think you and I have to admit there is a narcissism and a bit of an ego that comes with this job, Dan. And I think that that is sort of played well for Tony because you have to have sort of confidence. I've heard that even when he goes into some of these meeting rooms and he's talking to coaches and the quarterbacks, he'll say, so you think you're going to do this particular play here. And so initially there was some eye rolling about that. But I think there's now a respect level for him. And then I think, of course, Jim Nance, being paired with Jim Nance, you're sort of set up to succeed. But I think he's done a great job. And in fact, look, like I said, I own when I have bad takes. I was doing an event with Tony at Super Bowl. And I said that to him. I said, look, man, people were wrong about me and my career, and I appreciated when they owned up to that. So I owned up to Tony, and he certainly got handsomely paid by CBS and deservedly so.
Yeah, Nance plays such an unbelievable role in Tony's success because Tony is like your little kid, you know, like my son who just blurts out things and then you kind of have to clean it up and get it back, you know, in the middle of the road. Because Tony will be going, watch him, watch tight end, watch tight end. And there's Romo's back, or Dak's back to pass. So he has to clean it up. But, you know, it's just one of those kids who says something and it's fun. I just never saw that personality. Every bite that we had, every game, he would say, what was the usual refrain, Paulie, when they lost a game? I'm sad, I'm disappointed. Or Seton, did you have
it's
that?
Frustrating, disappointing.
Frustrating and disappointing. We used to say, know your Romo. Like, what year, what game did he say it? Because he would always say, frustrating, disappointing. And I go, okay, I can't see him as an analyst. It's like Jay Cutler. Oh, do you have it here?
It's just disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Cutler's the same way.
Right,
like, I don't, if Cutler was the way he is on Very Caballeri, that would be fun, but I can't imagine him going in there and lighting up an audition.
Cutler actually has a pretty amazing personality when you get him away. The same, I think a lot of these guys sort of get conditioned and maybe we're responsible for it, Dan, in the media. They're sort of damned if they do, damned if they don't. So they sort of refrain from saying too much to us. But when you sort of get them off the cuff and they get comfortable in that booth, I think Troy Aikman is one of the best. I love listening to Troy. I know some Cowboy fans can't stand him. They feel like he's too harsh. And I find his criticism interesting. I think it's no different than the way he was on the sidelines when we watch A Football Life and we see him mic'd up. So I do think a lot of these guys, their unique personalities come out. when you put him in the booth. I always felt bad for Jason Witten. I think the reason why the Jason Witten experiment failed was, one, I don't think he was set up to succeed with the right teammates. And I think in our job too, I've certainly been cast with people that maybe the chemistry is not necessarily there. But I also feel like Witten is always wants the golden star. And he's the type of guy that has willed himself to be good at his particular position. This sort of job, I think, comes with a little bit of the reps, but also sort of, like I said, a little bit of the narcissism and the ego. And Jason's never really had that. He's always been a team first guy. So I think that's why Jason and the Jason Witten experience failed, because he is such a talker. I find him interesting when you talk to him. It's just, it didn't work, unfortunately, in the booth for him.
But do you think he'd still be in the booth if he got good reviews?
I do.
Yeah.
I don't think he was one to really go on social media either. He's one of those guys that ignored it. And I know from my days in sports talk, you sort of develop a leather-like skin after a while. You sort of shrug off people's comments and their thoughts. Dan, I know everyone thinks that they can do your job, and not everybody can. It's certainly a lot harder than it looks. But I think probably Jason also spent a little bit too much time on social media caring what people thought. And I think that's what gets a lot of people in our line of work in trouble, when you worry a little bit too much about the people behind the keyboard.
I also thought, and I did reach out to him to try to help him, because I said, you're a receiver. You're used to waiting for the ball to come to you. You have to be a quarterback when you do this. You must see an attack. You can't wait. And he kept waiting, but that's really his position. It's, you may call on me four times a game, but I have to wait. And he didn't go after it. Like Romo steps up, he can't wait. He's like a kid that's got, he's had, four sodas. He's just so excited and can't wait to tell you what's going to happen. And even if he's wrong, he still brings energy there. And it's tricky. And I don't know if you look at, like, Drew Brees got hired by NBC. Is he a better studio analyst, or do you think, would he be better in the booth? Like, certain guys can do the booth. Very few can do the booth well. A lot of guys can do the studio. And I think that's always the tricky part of who's the next person you see as an analyst, an in-game analyst, who's going to be successful.
You bring up a good point, because I think, to your point, we see Brees sort of talking off the cuff as he did with the anthem situation and how much it got him in trouble. And I don't know if that makes you a little bit more gun-shy to sort of feel like you can put your opinion out there, because you see how quickly there can be a backlash. And that applies to your football take. That can apply to your political take. And some people are capable of sort of going out there. And again, I think there has to be an ego and a narcissism behind it, where you are so confident in what you're saying, you're not afraid of defending your position. So I've always thought Drew is sort of the interesting one. Like, I love Peyton Manning. I mean, we even just saw that when they did the golf tournament. He's just so good off the cuff. It's natural. It's not contrived. I think Cam Jordan, if you're going to look to the Saints locker room, yeah. I've done red carpet with him for NFL honors. He's amazing. He's done a lot of this stuff too, off to the side, just on the IG story. So he's done a lot of stuff with us.
I think he's studio, Jane. I think Cam, because you get more opportunities there, and you can tell stories there. It's hard to tell a story in a game. And I think Cam has that personality. I want to see that personality, too. I think Philip Rivers might be sneaky great in the booth.
I love Philip Rivers. I would love that. You know, it's funny. I haven't actually heard his name really tossed out there that much. He is so fun to watch. Even just his impassioned speech leaving the Chargers, right?
Yeah.
I have so much just respect for him just as a human. When we did the Pro Bowl, his daughters had a daddy-daughter dance. And he flew all the way from Orlando back to San Diego and then back again for the game, because he wasn't going to miss his daddy-daughter dance. How he does all those things. And then he had the outfitted van that took him from San Diego to LA. So that, again, that he wasn't, removing his family from San Diego, something they had gotten used to. I have a ton of respect for that guy. And to your point, I could listen to him for days, and I would love to see him bring back the bolero. I loved that look. I think that the booth has been missing that.
I just want to get you on record. Does the NFL season start on time?
Good question. I was incredibly optimistic about it, Dan. I know that those conversations are still ongoing. I can't tell you either way, to be completely honest. I mean, as reporters, we're having a meeting this week to discuss sort of what our assignments look like. What does travel look like? I didn't even think about it. It was brought up to me. here in Texas, and I now considered in a hotspot state, our facilities that are not hotspots going to let me in. Of course, I cover the Cowboys almost 99% of the time. I have the Titans and the Saints as well. But those are all these ongoing discussions that are being had. But to your point, I think a lot of people are looking for some answers as we get up closer to the deadline. But I think those are still ongoing.
It's great to talk to you again, Jane. Great work. And congrats on the success with the NFL Network.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, Dan.
That's Jane Slater, NFL Network reporter. We're going to take a break. Back with your phone calls after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show. Jason Sudeikis, join us coming up top of the hour. Hall Pass was a sneaky good movie. I like that.
Very rewatchable.
Yeah. Horrible Bosses, I thought was funny too. Jason Sudeikis, the former Saturday Night Live cast member, will join us coming up top of the hour. Joe Theismann, former Redskins MVP, will join us as well. I started the show with a report with cryptic messages from NFL reporters who cover the Washington Redskins. And they said, basically, there's a story coming out about Washington, and it's not about the nickname. I haven't seen anything about this, but these messages, some of these tweets that were sent out, you know, Jason Lockenfora, well-respected NFL reporter for CBS, he put it out that everybody kind of had the same story without really telling you what the story was, that there's going to be something explosive coming out of the Washington Redskins. And they just fired two people over the weekend. So you're firing two people in July, which I found interesting. Maybe it's just a coincidence. I don't know if there's a toxic culture there, and that's the story that's coming out. I don't know if changing the nickname is a preemptive strike to distract from something like that. I don't know. But pure speculation based off of some of these tweets that we've gotten from respectable NFL reporters. Have you seen anything else on this, McLevin? I know you brought these tweets to my attention early this morning.
I don't know nothing, but I'm sure our buddy Ethan Cooperson, the stats guy, has.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rare. Wow.
No, I just Googled on Twitter. I haven't seen anything new come out.
Rare. You got to let it go. Rare. I mean, Ethan is, he's the future. You know that.
Ethan? Oh, man.
That's what they call him? Like his nickname? The future?
Yeah, he's the future. You're Favre and he's Aaron Rodgers. No. You're Alex Smith and he's Patrick Mahomes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No,
I'm Aaron Rodgers. He's Jordan Love. And we'll see how it works out.
McLovin being replaced. Man.
What if there's a backup Danette that emerges for all of us that could do what we do? That would be really terrifying.
We have lookalikes. Well, Seton and Pauly have lookalikes in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we have a listener who sent in a picture, and we were floored how much these two guys look like Seton and Pauly. It was remarkable that they found two guys that ugly that looked just like Pauly. Wait, what?
Hey.
But they look so much like us that even Seton and I thought they looked like us. Usually you don't think someone looks like you.
No, when somebody said, you'll tell me that I look like some guy, and I'll go, I don't look like that guy. On the back screen, if you're watching on youtube.com/Dan Patrick Show, that's not Seton, and that's not Pauly.
The guy's got short hair, receding hairline like mine. He's got a broken nose, glasses, sarcastic attitude, unliked by his coworkers.
He's got a beer in a koozie.
Yeah.
And the other guy looks like Seton. He's got a Star Wars t-shirt on.
Yeah.
Man, those look just like you guys.
Yeah, it definitely made me do oh, wow. Yeah, that does. Sort of an old haircut for me, but right on.
Yeah, like a better looking version of you two guys.
Yeah.
Wow.
Feels like that. Oops. Let me take a couple of phone calls here. Caleb in North Carolina joins us. Hey, Caleb. By the way, Jane Slater killed. She was great today. Hey, Caleb.
Hey, DP 65250. Shout out to Chat Row. Yeah, just wanted to give you a take on the whole Redskins situation.
Yeah.
So back in 2018, the New York Times did an article about some inappropriate behavior between Redskins executives and cheerleaders in Costa Rica
while on a photo shoot.
I remember hearing that. Yeah.
I wonder if this is all connected back to these latest two firings.
I don't know, Caleb, and I'm trying to get information on this. I don't have any sources on this, but thank you for the phone call. Yeah, they're just cryptic messages. And let me see if I can bring this up here on my computer and read off the screen here. Jason Lockenfor, the warped and toxic culture of the Washington football team is about to be exposed in a sickening fashion again. Exposed. That's not about a nickname. J.P. Finley works with NBC locally. A real busy week, and it's not all going to be about the name. It's not all going to be pretty. I don't know if this is a preemptive strike by Daniel Snyder, where he's like, let me get out ahead of this, and let me try to curry some favor here. Yeah, Seton.
So you're saying the name change and everything is like there's about some bombs about to be dropped. We might as well get ahead and start getting some good.
I'm just wondering that. Mm. Just wondering that. Not. I don't have any information. Just one. That's one of the things I thought of when I first heard it. Adam in Florida joins us. Hi, Adam. What do you have for me?
Hey, I just had a question for you, more of a hypothetical. But since that Prescott isn't signed and it seems like neither are going to, you know, bend, do you think that he'll be the quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in a year or two? Because Brady's only a two-year contract, and it'd be a perfect scenario. We got a good offense, pretty good upcoming defense. So maybe he's holding out for a huge contract, and then, like you said, he'll be 30 years old. He can be the quarterback down here in Tampa. I just wanted your thoughts on that.
I have no idea. You know, maybe it's Deshaun Watson who ends up there. Bullwinkle in Washington. Hey, Bullwinkle.
Hey, hi. 5'10", 175, before, during, and after the virus. I had an idea. I shared this with Marvin, and I think it'd be an interesting segment. I think you should have the M&M segment with him and M. Ariel, and they could have a maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. They could have
Bullwinkle, thank you. No wonder Marvin put him through as a phone call. So Marvin could get more FaceTime with Ariel.
Hey, this is Steve in Memphis. Marvin deserves a raise.
Jason Sudeikis will join us in the final hour, as will Joe Theismann. More phone calls as well, if Marvin lets him through.